Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful that you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to comments and questions throughout. If you'd like to join our live audience, I would love it. You can go to nataliecogan.com to see the schedule of upcoming shows and to sign up. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a deep breath to arrive in this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find this episode really valuable.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to this month's edition of the Awesome Human Podcast. And if you're here with us live, to the Awesome Human Podcast Live. So wonderful to all be together again. I really look forward to these gatherings with all of you who are here live on Zoom and everyone who's listening later as a recording or on your podcasting platform. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that's been resonating so much with our awesome human community, with everyone I've been connecting with. We're going to be talking about finding your path through uncertainty. And I have a really, really wonderful guest joining me in a few minutes. Her name is Jenny Blake. She's a best-selling author of several books, including one called Pivot, which is something we'll be talking about, which is about making pivots and changes in your career. She's a career strategist, a speaker, a podcast host, and Jenny and I connected when I was a guest on her podcast, and we ended up talking a lot about how we're both people who create uncertainty in our own lives by changing things. And so Jenny is going through a huge change in her career and her life without a clear path. And so I thought it'd be so wonderful to have her here and talk with us. So she'll be joining us in a few minutes. But as we gather here live, as we get going, I'm going to open my chat. And I would love, I always love to start with something. I actually wanted to start with something a little bit different today. I usually ask you to tell me why you're an awesome human, and you can do that. I always want to know why you're an awesome human. But since we're talking about uncertainty today, what I'd love for you just to think about, and again, if you're here live, I always encourage you to share in chat because it's a way for us to connect. And if you're listening to this as a recording or on your podcasting platform, you can just kind of reply to these prompts in your mind or out loud. But I'd love for you to think about your relationship with uncertainty and share that. And tell me in chat, are you going through uncertainty in your life or career right now? Is it something you actually enjoy? A lot of people do. A lot of people enjoy change and uncertainty, or is it something you resist? Tell me about your relationship with uncertainty. Share in chat. I'd love to hear kind of where you are. And the reason I want to start there is because I wrote an email earlier this week to our community where I said that I hate change and uncertainty, and yet I'm really great at change. I'm a master at change. I'm a great positive change catalyst in my own life, in the lives of others. And I actually hosted a really incredible positive change catalyst masterclass yesterday. That was really incredible 90-minute experience where I took everyone through the three core pillars of making positive changes in your life, including as you're going through an uncertain time. And by the way, if you're here live and you want to join, I'm hosting the same Positive Change Masterclass again on Saturday. I'm going to put the link in chat. It is totally free to join. It was a really incredible experience for many people and for me. So you can join me for that. When I wrote the email earlier this week that I hate change, but I'm really great at it, I got so many different responses from people, some of whom told me, wow, that's really changes my mindset because I've always thought I hate change and uncertainty, so I must be really bad at them. Doesn't have to be the case. You can dislike something and be good at it. And then a lot of people replied and said, you know what? I've actually grown to really love when I go through change and uncertainty because it opens up possibilities. And so I wanted to begin with this question. I'm going to read. Thank you so much. I love this community for how much you share. I want to read a couple things that you wrote about your relationship with change and uncertainty. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. If you're just joining us, we have a guest joining us in a few minutes. We're going to talk about finding our paths through uncertain times. But I'm going to read some of what you shared about your relationship with uncertainty. Linda says, I can eventually embrace it, but it may take a bit to get there. They're going so fast. Sarah says, I'm going through IVF and the uncertainty of how my life will go is huge. I try to take things one at a time. That's what a journey. They're going too fast. Okay. Hillary says, I have uncertainty in my professional and personal life. It gives me great anxiety. Try to use meditation to cope. Crystal says, uncertainty is scary. It has a lot of fear of the unknown. Our company just got acquired and my position is uncertain. Perhaps a career change, a pivot is to come for me. Feeling in the thick of it, everything is a blur. I think so much. Thank you for sharing, Crystal and everyone. I think that we can all relate to that. And you know, you've probably heard me talk about it, but as we dive into this, I do want to share, you know, you all know that, or I talk a lot, I'm a geek of science. I'm a neuroscience geek. I love to understand how the brain works. And so uncertainty is unsettling and change for all of us. There isn't a single human being for whom change and uncertainty is not unsettling or uncomfortable. And that's because our brain hates it. They've done research that shows that human beings would rather experience physical pain than face uncertainty. Think about that for a moment. Human beings would rather experience physical pain than face uncertainty. Why is that? And the reason for that is the human brain, it really, like, your brain only has one main priority. It wants to help you survive. And so it's always focused on avoiding possible danger. And when things are uncertain, when something changes in your life, right? Like someone said, they're going through IVF or your company is acquired or something is changing at work or in your life, there's immediate uncertainty and your brain doesn't know if there's going to be danger or not. And so it starts to worry and feel anxious. Your brain actually releases tremendous amount of cortisol, which is a stress hormone, when you face uncertainty. So none of us love uncertainty. The human brain hates it, resists it, would rather experience pain. However, it is, and this has been such a big focus for me, both in kind of my own inner work and the work that I do through speaking and mentorship and leadership work, we can support ourselves and we can learn as human beings to be better, to help our brain handle change and uncertainty much better. That is possible. And again, if you weren't able to attend the masterclass I taught yesterday on positive change, I am doing the same masterclass on Saturday, and I put a link in chat and I'll send it with the email for you to join, because we talk a lot about this. And I just want to share a little bit just from my own perspective. You know, I came to the US as a refugee, which big uncertainty, right? And so, and I've like just always had a lot of change in my life. I've changed careers more times than I can count. And I, by choice, I've started companies. I've left companies. I've been in big tech. I've been in finance. I've started a media company. I've started a book publishing company. I've started a company for working moms. I started Happier, the company I run now. And I have changed my relationship with myself. As many of you know, I went through a really severe burnout and breakdown 8 years ago. And I fundamentally shifted how I see myself and my life. I started to paint when I was 40. You're looking at my art. I'm actually wearing my art. If you're here live, I'm wearing my art today. And so I'm someone who, I create a lot of change in my life and I'm still uncomfortable with it, but I've learned how to support myself, And I just want to share a little bit, you know, I've shared in my emails that last year, 2023 for me was a year of the goo. The goo is my endearing nickname for that part, for the chrysalis between the caterpillar and the butterfly. You know, when a caterpillar goes into the cocoon to become a butterfly? So that goo, that mess, that's where I was last year. And that's how I really have come to think about uncertainty. I felt really stuck. It wasn't caused by anything external. Things were not flowing in my work. I felt really stuck. I felt really uncertain about where I wanted to take, what direction I wanted to take in my work. It was really, really difficult year. And I call it the goo. And I'm at a place where I'm really emerging from the goo. I'm turning and you're looking at one of my favorite paintings I've done. It's of this butterfly. I painted it at the end of last year when I really began to feel that I'm kind of ready to emerge. And I am emerging and it feels wonderful, right? When you figure out, okay, this is the path I want to take. And actually, I do want to say that a lot of the path that I'm choosing for my work is to guide other people through the goo into their next evolution of their flourishing, of their next butterfly journey, because I realized how challenging it is for us humans and that I have a lot of skills and a lot of experience to help guide you through it. And actually, on that note, because I know I'm going to forget once Jenny gets here and we start diving into our interview, I am opening spots in my 12-week small group mentorship program, which is going to kick off around mid-April. And the whole focus for the small group mentorship is to guide you through whatever uncertainty you're dealing with personally or professionally into your next evolution of flourishing, of deep aliveness, of a new paradigm of success through uncovering your multiple dimensions, through your next journey of your butterfly evolution. And if that's something that calls to you to do that kind of inner work in a small group where you get a lot of personalized attention from me and guidance and coaching, and you're with a few other people that are committed to that. If that's something that calls to you, send me an email. Just open your email right now. Send an email to natalie@happier.com. Just put mentorship in the subject line. And in the email, just tell me like interested in the 12-week small mentorship program. And I'll reply. I'll send you a little link that you can schedule a 30-minute call with me so we can talk about it. I can tell you more, see if it's the right fit. And so this goo, right, this goo of uncertainty, it's really uncomfortable. But at the same time, within it is the possibility. And that's something we're going to be talking about today. And I just want to geek out on this. You may know this, especially if you have younger kids. I remember when my daughter was younger, Mia, she was all about like the butterfly, how the caterpillar becomes a butterfly. But I just want to say two things about this goo, because I really think there's not much difference between caterpillars and butterflies and us humans in that journey. So you may know these. And if you know, please tell me if you do. I discovered them recently. So the first is when the caterpillar goes into the goo, it literally digests itself. Okay, it's kind of gross, but I think it's really, really kind of symbolic that for us, when we're in this place of uncertainty in our personal lives or work, we have to do this work of essentially digesting ourselves. What do I mean by that? I mean that it offers us this opportunity to really reflect on everything that we've done, on the different layers of ourselves, on things we've learned. And I think that's a really beautiful process. We live in this very, very busy world where, I don't know about you, I don't get to do that a lot. And I got to do that a lot last year when I was in the goo, and it is not pleasant. It is not comfortable, but it is so essential to unleashing the next. It's almost like we cannot move forward in life without digesting and leaving things behind. And that first part of the caterpillar becoming the butterfly, of going into the cocoon and like digesting itself, I think is really symbolic. So I want to offer that to you as a symbol. If you're in this uncertain place, as a symbol for you to think about, like, that's the first part of going through the goo of uncertainty. The other thing that I really love about the caterpillar to the butterfly symbolic journey is that when the caterpillar digests itself and the goo is just this mess, right? The imaginal cells that will become the butterfly, the wings, the spine, the little antlers, the imaginal cells are already there. How beautiful is that? Like, the imaginal cells of what your next path looks like, they're already there. We don't know them when we're in those initial parts of the goo. We do not know them. But as I was going through this myself all of last year, I found it really hopeful to recognize, to think about that my next, like the butterfly that's going to come out, is already here. I just don't Like, I'm not aware of it yet, right? So you may not be aware of it yet. And so I just offer this to you because I just find that symbolic journey really, really meaningful and powerful. And so what I want you to think about as Jenny joins us and we dive into this conversation of finding your path through uncertainty is, you've probably heard me say, if you've been around me and my work a lot, that you create the path by taking steps. And that's, again, a lot of what we focused on yesterday when I did the Positive Change Catalyst Masterclass, is that often we have to take those initial steps for our path without knowing where we're headed. And that's really, really challenging. But that's what we're going to be talking about. But I wanted to kick off this podcast and kind of get us into this conversation with that kind of the caterpillar to butterfly model as a symbol that your next evolution of you, of your family, of your work, of like your next journey. And by the way, I think we go through this caterpillar to butterfly a lot in life. I don't think it's once or twice. I think this is our journey, but it's already here. And so much of what is difficult about uncertainty is also beautiful, because it's where we get to peel off some of these layers. We get to leave behind some of the stories that we believe about ourselves that no longer serve us. And we get to uncover and give expression to some other dimensions that we have within ourselves. And I find that really, really beautiful. So before we dive in with Jenny, I have a couple of questions just tactically that you've been asking me about behind the scenes. So I'm going to put a link again. So the masterclass I taught yesterday is called the Positive Change Masterclass. It's a 90-minute journey where I take you through the three core pillars of creating positive change in your life, including letting go of stories that don't serve you, imagining what's possible, committing to aligned action, creating an inner support system. I'm teaching the same exact masterclass this Saturday at 10 a.m. There's a link for you to register in chat. It will also be in your follow-up email. If you cannot make it on Saturday, please register, and that's how you get the replay. The small group mentorship program that I mentioned, it is by invitation. It's going to be really small. I'm really working really hard to put together a beautiful group committed to working through whatever uncertainty you're dealing with and uncovering your dimensions of brilliance and leaving behind stories that don't serve you so they can really flourish into your next phase. If that's something that is of interest to you, send me an email, natalie@happier.com. Just put mentorship in the subject line. Tell me you're interested and I'll follow up with you from there. With that, let's dive in. I don't want to waste another minute because I see Jenny is here and I want to dive into this conversation. Hold on. I'm going to spotlight us both. Hello, Jenny. Welcome to the Awesome Human Podcast.
Yay. Thank you. I'm so delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's so welcome to our community. And I love that you're wearing bright colors, as you know, because we've already done a podcast together. I'm a fan. And today I'm really doing the overwhelm because I'm like wearing my art. I have my art. So grateful you're here, Jenny. And I was just chatting with, we have more than 100 folks here who are live with us on Zoom and thousands and tens of thousands who are going to be watching this as a recording. So I always want to say actually hello to you in the future. But I'm so excited that we get an opportunity to talk about finding path through uncertainty, because it is something that this community has been really resonating with. I shared with everyone, I think I shared with you when we chatted, that I'm emerging out of it, but last year for me was very much the goo, the total uncertainty. So I'm so grateful to get to talk to you about it. I want to dive in. So I introduced you, I shared a little bit of your bio, so you'll tell us more about yourself as we chat. But you've written a book on pivoting. You are someone who is going through a lot of change in your life right now. A lot of things are changing. You're not even sure where you're going. Can you talk about, do you think you're someone who is good at change? Do you hate, what's your relationship with change and uncertainty? That was the first question I asked everyone to share when they join.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I can imagine most of us have a mixed reaction if we would ask ourselves, how do I really feel about change? The reason I wrote Pivot, my second book, was because I didn't feel very resilient in the face of change. particularly career change, because career changes seem like they're going to threaten our very survival, our ability to provide for ourselves. Through writing that book, you know, I definitely became clearer on just how to navigate the process. And in doing the research for the book, I interviewed, and that was 8 years ago. So I've heard from thousands of people who it's like, change is truly the only constant. And my mantra with that book is, well, then let's get better at it. And I feel like part of getting better at it is to just stop shaming and blaming ourselves that there's something wrong if we're in the goo state, like you talked about, or that it's not, that it's taking too long. So my relationship to change, I would say earlier in my life, was much more fraught with anxiety and a lot of blaming myself. What's wrong with me? Why can't I just be happy? I'm at a dream company or a dream job or running my dream business. What's the problem here? And I would get in my own way because I was beating myself up. And over time, even though I still think that the changes that really rock us to our core and wake us up and demand a new way of living or working, I still think that they're challenging. But by definition, it's like, if the pandemic didn't wipe out 80% of my business in the first 2 weeks, maybe I wouldn't have created Free Time, my third book, and my body of work. If one of my biggest corporate clients hadn't canceled the licensing contract that was like the final straw of 4 years of chaos last summer, I wouldn't have started my latest writing project. So as much as I resist them in the moment, I have learned over time that essentially those are the alarm clocks that are waking me up to new possibilities, no matter how horrible they sometimes feel in the moment.
I love that visual or that symbol of like the change is the alarm clock. I really love that. So I asked some folks when we joined, I asked our awesome humans to share some of the uncertainty or changes they're going through. And a lot of people here are going through professional uncertainty, whether a company got acquired, job is uncertain, laid off, new career. So I have lots of things I want to talk to you about your own goo that you're going through now. But since you are the expert and you wrote a book on pivoting, can you talk a little bit of like maybe your kind of best lessons learned that you shared in the book or from interviewing all those people about like the mind space, the mindset to help handle like that kind of career uncertainty?
The biggest takeaway for me was that nobody really solves their pivot up front. Let's say change chooses you, you get laid off, or even you want to retire. I mean, it could be anything, or you're bored and you're ready for something new. That actually, there is no way to intellectualize what's next. Time and time again, myself and others, I've seen that it's really through running pilots, which is the third stage, but specifically pilots that are grounded in your strengths, the things that are already working and things that you're most excited about. Because sometimes when we're in a goo state, it's so hard not to focus. Like you've taught this many times, our brains have a negativity bias. It's so hard not to focus on what's missing, what's wrong, what we don't know, what we don't have, what we're afraid of. And ultimately, that's normal, but none of that fuels the tank for the way forward. What fuels the tank is taking the pressure off, not having to solve anything up front, doubling down on what is working, even if it's only 5 or 10% of what you're currently doing. Looking at where you want to go, even if you don't know how the heck to get there. And then it's not even in the book, but in the years following, I've adopted this mantra, put yourself in the path of pivot, meaning sometimes you just need to put yourself in the right room or introductory class to something or a certain milieu. You know, Brian Eno coined the term seniors to describe groups of people close together. It's partly why I live in New York City, but you might have a seniors for, there's a Crafticon conference that happens every year. You know, like there are really cool seniors out there now. Substack is a form of seniors online that I haven't experienced in over a decade, but I am now. And so putting yourself in the path of pivot means, I don't know what this is going to become, but I have a magnet in my heart that's pulling me forward. I don't know why, but I'm going to put myself there and I'm going to see what happens. And I'm going to let serendipity come in and play a role here. And it's just so magical how, if you take those few tiny steps forward, those magical moments start to happen in return.
I really love that. And I love that you focused on and you began with this concept, right? That I do talk a lot about, especially when we're going through change and uncertainty, the brain's negativity bias actually gets more sensitive. It actually goes into overdrive because the brain is like, oh my God, possible danger. Let's think of all the things that are wrong. So I love that your suggestion, like to begin with, well, what's okay? What's working? Like however small that is, or what do I like about, like someone was talking about their company got acquired, their job is uncertain. Okay, like what are some things that are okay? Because that actually gives us the grounding to look ahead. And then I really love this notion of the magnet in your heart. You know, I'm on record saying I don't believe in this idea of having passion. I have had a very rich life and career, and I am in love with what I do. I've never had a passion. Like I was never passionate about anything. Like I was not passionate about doing what I do now. I didn't know it existed. I kind of made it my own. So I think there's a lot of pressure when we're being told, like, find your passion. I don't know. And so I love that you talk about this magnet in your heart. I've often talked about, like, if something is pulling at you. So we have similar to, like, just being pulled. And I want you to talk about serendipity. It is something that has played a big role in your life. You just talked about this idea of putting yourself in the, you know, in the path of the pivot. I want to, you know, I try to be really transparent. You know, I spent so much of my life living in a very forced, rational, cerebral way. And what I mean by that, I kind of spent a lot of my life before I went through my like breakdown and burnout 8 years ago, which is, I really think was the universe just going, hey, you don't have to struggle so much. There's a different way to be. But I would say it's not that I didn't believe in serendipity. It's that I believe that like, if I'm not walking through a wall to make something happen, it's not going to happen. You know, if I'm not building a pyramid, it's not going to get built. And I've completely like discovered that it's so not the case, that there's this flow of events and people and the universe and energy that's moving all around us. And when we take little steps, we can connect to people or opportunities. But you're a serendipity expert. It's a big part of your life, not expert. It's a core part of how you experience life. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because on one hand, I find serendipity a really wonderful concept. And on the other hand, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to leave my career up to serendipity. That feels really irresponsible.
Yeah, I can relate to that for sure. I see serendipity as an exercise in surprise, delight, curiosity, openness, and faith to an extent. So you're right. It's not really the thing that gets activated from our more rational planning impulse side that wants to know everything in advance or have it all just so. I think for me, because the more I open up to it, the more I look for it, the more I experience it, and intuition works the same way. I've just seen it work its magic so many times.
Can you give us an example? I'd love to hear an example.
So I share in Free Time, my third book, how my husband, everyone would always tell me I should be on dating apps. I was perpetually single in all my 20s pretty much. And I hated dating apps, hated them. And I would always say, they're not for me. They're not for me. And partly I felt that something was wrong with me. Well, can't I just get on board? What? Every time I was on a bad date, I was just dying inside. I wished I could be home reading a book. Like I would rather be single forever than have to just go on these bad dates. And like, I didn't like who I was becoming on those apps. And so this was now almost 10 years ago, but I was just very stubborn that that's not my style. And it's not going to be a numbers game for me. And living in New York City, everyone will tell you, oh, well, nobody wants to settle down there. Dating's impossible. Actual models are walking down the street. And that is true. But nonetheless, I met my husband walking opposite directions as I was 25 feet from my house. I was wearing overalls and he was on a mission to go find overalls. And as we passed, he just said, nice overalls. I turned around and said, thank you. We started talking. He and his friend invited me to have a burger in the East Village. I went. And then the rest is history. We hung out. I got to know him and his friends. Another example, I was recently invited to give a talk at the New York Times and they couldn't pay me. They didn't have a budget. And I said, okay, I've been a 20-year subscriber. My dad's going to be in town that week. Would you mind then, could my dad tag along? And can you give us a tour, anything that would make it a special experience? And that's something I learned from Kevin Kelly, that he doesn't even say yes to speaking gigs if there's not some kind of unique experience, because he doesn't need the money.
Yeah.
And so They said, sure, you can come. You can attend the opinion section stand-up meeting. You'll do your lunch fireside chat. Then we'll give you a tour of the archives. And as we did a tour of the archives, excuse me, the archivist, this incredible guy who's been there for 30 years, happens to live in Washington State where my dad lives. And so they visited over the holidays and we've kept in touch.
Wow.
And I would have never met him. Like if I had been a stickler on my fee, I would have never met him. Or if I didn't
Yeah.
just say, sure, I'll do it, but is there anything creative we can do to kind of make my dad happy, who's also been a
Yeah.
subscriber? And now it created this new, really interesting relationship that could only really happen from serendipity. I would have never even known it's called the morgue, actually, the archives in the basement of the
Yeah.
building. Like, would have never even known that it existed. And in fact, there's a feature on this man who's been there 30 years, and the title of the feature is called Cultivating Serendipity.
Wow. I mean, okay, I love these examples. And the thing about as you're talking, what I keep thinking about, the image that comes to mind is that especially when we're in an uncertain place, the brain actually narrows our vision. I don't know if y'all know this, but this is the Natalie Geek Science moment. When you're under severe stress, or you're facing, your brain thinks you're facing possible danger, which in uncertainty it does all the time. It narrows the vision. Physically, your vision is narrower because it's getting ready to figure out to see the enemy, like physically. It also narrows your mental lens. What I mean by that is it becomes much harder to take in different points of view when we're under a lot of stress. So this actually naturally happens, right? If someone, like someone was saying, like their job is uncertain, like that's scary. So everything narrows. So you just, I think we've all been had this experience where we're like in this tunnel vision. Oh my God, that what if this doesn't work out? What am I going to do? Right? Like we all know what that feels like. What I hear you talk about as you gave these examples, serendipity, it's like widening the lens. It's widening the surface area of possibility. That's what I keep thinking about as you're talking, to allow for different things to come into our not just physical vision, but our mental vision, our sense of possibility. And I think that is such an important thing. Given how many people here are facing professional uncertainty, loss of possible loss of a job or change of careers, I'd love for you to talk about like this idea of I want to change careers, but I'm not sure what to do, which is a lot of what you explore and pivot, and connect it to this idea of like, how do you widen your lens of possibility? You know, like I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure what to do. I feel like I want to try something else, or I need to try something else. I don't know what to do.
Well, that's a good first step is I don't know the answers. I don't know what to do. I just know that I'm ready for a change. And a lot of companies have sort of contracted hiring in the last few years. There's actually has been fewer opportunities for even internal mobility. Doesn't matter. There is still so much you can do within the role that you have, or with if you're running your own business within the current context. So I would say, don't worry about big dramatic changes and having to find a whole new job or a whole new industry. Usually there are energizing opportunities available that just aren't going to be your job title. So an example of that, when I first started at Google in 2006, this is a little thing for fun. I asked if we could have some budget to create a training team book club. It was never my full-time job or anything close. It was just a hobby, but we would sometimes invite the author to speak. And then a couple years later, when the entire Talks at Google team was at risk of falling apart because it was entirely volunteer led, they needed somebody to lead it and restructure. And they said, oh, Jenny, you like books. Do you want to help out with this? And I did for 8 months. It was never my job. It was only ever 30% of what I was doing. But I made connections and invited authors to speak who were good friends and mentors to this day, 15 years later. So that interim project, you mentioned passion. I talk about project-based purpose.
I love
That
that.
8-month project is one of the things I'm proudest of doing, and it was never my job. It's not on LinkedIn, but the relationships I made because they tapped me, knowing what I was interested in, and I will say passionate about books for sure. It became something later. So sometimes the opportunity that you want doesn't even exist yet. Or the opportunity that is a fit for you, it doesn't exist yet. And there's been many times where somebody who likes going from zero to one. I really do like inventing things. That's why I like writing books. I like making opportunities where one doesn't exist because for me, it feels less competitive than trying to compete where everyone else is. I'm actually not that competitive a person, and I don't tend to win when that's the goal. So I have a Substack called Rolling in Dough with a Facepalm, DOH. And I wrote this piece, Why Revenue Goals Don't Work for Me, that even when I would set these goals and think, oh, I'm going to earn seven figures in my 10th year of business. And like, it didn't work. And all that ended up happening was I was looking at other people's paper and other people's revenue and other people's businesses and sort of disappointed when I fell short. But still, that was my peak earnings that only crashed once the pandemic hit. But I didn't appreciate it because I was so busy trying to like do what everyone else was doing. So whenever I find myself, there's a Mark Twain quote, when you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect.
I love that. I think you and I share that. I don't want it to get lost, the concept that you mentioned of project-based purpose. And I love that story. You know, when we think of purpose and meaning, and I talk about this a lot, we think of like, what is the purpose in my life? What is the meaning in my life? Right. And that can really become really overwhelming. And it's often like when I work with people, it feels like, oh, it's out there somewhere and I have to go find it. I often talk about meaning and purpose, like think about what you're doing, how it helps one other person, right? Because that's a huge source of meaning. I love this concept that it can be a project that's really purposeful for you, that's actually where we derive purpose. It's not this meta abstract. It's in our day-to-day interactions and work that connect to something that is one of our gifts or allow us to share one of our gifts or passions, like books, in the service of others. So I really love that. I want to talk a little bit more about, because I think it's such a powerful idea of like, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to take some steps and like the opportunity is not there yet, but it will be created. So I want you to talk about, you hosted two really popular podcasts for 8 years, 9 years, a really long time, and you have just put them on pause, which I can imagine is a giant decision or not. And they were a giant part of what you were known for and what you did. And that's how you and I met. Like, that's what, how I knew you. Can you talk about a little bit about that decision, but also kind of connect that to your GOO and your next, and talk to us about that? Because I think that often, and I find this in my work, when I work with people one-on-one or in a small group, I often hear people tell me, you know, I've been in this career for 20 years, making up the number. I've been in this career for 20 years and I'm really great at it and I enjoy so much of it. But there's this something in me that's like irritating me a little bit or calling to me. I don't even know what it is, but I feel like maybe it's time for a change. But I'm scared to do it because I'm really great at my job and I actually love what I do. So can you talk about that, your decision and kind of your GOO and all of that?
Yeah, there's a lot in there, and it may be a little different than for someone who's in a job. I think my situation is almost the opposite, which is another Substack post called Do What You Love and Your Dreams. Do what you love and the money will follow if dot dot dot. And then there's a list of 20 things, and it says you must meet at least three of these, including like what you love happens to be like programming AI software, or you love managing big teams of people inside corporations. The reason I wrote this article is that I was told as an elder millennial, I just grew up in the generation, which is like, do what you love and the money will follow. And I had been podcasting for 9 years, but in the last two, I went all in. I said, okay, I clearly haven't been making this my focus. If I want to really have it take off and be my full-time job, because this is the thing I love. This is my zone of genius. I love having conversations just like this one. I could do it all day. It gave me energy. It fit all the criteria that all the self-help and business books talk about. So for 2 years, I hired a professional production team. I produced 14 episodes a month, trying to get my download numbers up and be part of people's daily routines and rituals and morning walks. I did everything I could. I mean, now I have a lot of shortcomings, including I'm not on social media. So my podcast is my main ongoing way of communicating, in addition to the newsletters. I'm not I didn't have a lot of money to throw at ad revenue to try to boost downloads because that's not even a guarantee. So to make a very long story short, I went all in. I treated it like a full-time job and spent 80% of my time and money investing in this, and it didn't work. By the time I paused them in February, I made the decision in November because without keynote speaking as frequently as it had been pre-pandemic, I just didn't have the ability to self-fund the projects in the business that kind of took more money than they made, including the podcast. But me being my Delulu self thought, well, I'll break through. I'll be one of the, maybe it's only 1,000 shows out of 3 million, but I was like, if anyone can do it, I'm going to believe in myself. I can do it. And the fact is, I didn't, and I couldn't, or at least not in time, and certainly not without another source of revenue in the business to kind of fund this hobby within the business, or hobby, trying to make it something that it didn't seem to want to be. And a lot of big shows are having financial challenges. And Apple rolled out this iOS update a few weeks after I made that decision that some of the biggest shows that are 10 times the size of mine, because of this one Apple change that had nothing to do with them, downloads dropped 40%. They then got 40% less ad revenue, and they had to lay off half their teams. And so it was not an easy decision, and I do have FOMO for who are the friends that I haven't met yet, or getting to talk to authors and people that I admire. But I could feel that something needed to change. I could feel that if I was meant to be doing this, the money would have followed by now. And because it hasn't, I need to read the room. I need to say, clearly this didn't work. And I think that's the conversation I hear less about this, like, pursue your passion, is sometimes you pursue your passion with everything you've got, and it's not enough. It's not enough to make it your main thing. At least it wasn't for me. And so it's like choosing what risks you're willing to take and being willing to not have it work and not have that sort of like crush your financial picture, which mine practically has.
Well,
Sorry, I was like,
I mean, first of all, Jenny, I just really appreciate your honesty about it. I really, really appreciate it. I think it says a lot about who you are. I think it's just in such great service of everyone listening right now. As a creator and a multi-time entrepreneur who's failed at a tremendous amount of projects that I put my all into, I just really appreciate the raw honesty. And I think it brings something to mind that I want to chat about. Yes, this idea that if you give it your all and it'll happen, life is complicated and you might give something your all and it's just not the right time, not the right things, right? Many people, I don't know, many people, but a lot of people in my community know me because when I started Happier 10 years ago, we started as a tech company and the first product we launched was a gratitude mobile app. I came out of tech. I was a tech exec for 20 years. That's what I knew how to do. And we built this Happier Gratitude app that helped hundreds of thousands of people. And it got tremendous press and all kinds of things. And it had no business model. And I was a burnt out CEO on a brink of a breakdown, making absolutely awful decisions. And eventually had to realize, like, this is not a business I want to run. I actually want to write and speak and teach people these skills, right? So facing that, like, failure essentially to make the business out of the app was incredibly difficult. But what I often think about is none of this work that I've done since then, which is all about, like, I decided I want to go into deeper transformation in people's lives. So both through speaking and my leadership work and mentorship, and including like having these conversations, none of that would have been possible if I hadn't failed at the app. And again, I think, it's interesting. Someone challenged me the other day. They said, "Well, Natalie, what does it mean that you failed? Like, you literally, like, we had thousands and thousands of letters and emails from people who said it changed their lives, and hundreds of thousands of more than 1 million people used it." And so I think it's also important to say, like, it was a good comment to hear. Like, it failed financially. It did not fail as something that brought me tremendous purpose. It did
So
not
true.
fail at changing so many people's lives. It did not fail at actually in adding something to the dialogue in our culture around gratitude. It created a giant force field around gratitude and gratitude at work. So I think it's also important. I'm actually, as I'm talking and as I was listening to, this is coming to mind. And I love that you said that, like, we can judge ourselves so harshly. right, in our efforts. So I think it's really important to be more intentional and granular, right? Like your podcast failed as a commercial venture. It didn't work as a commercial venture, but it inspired so many people. Someone like me who was on it got the gift of getting to know you. So I think it's also really important. And I want to say this to everyone, like whether it's in your work or outside of work, when you're doing something and it feels stuck, it feels in the goo, it's not working. I think it's important to not kind of, you know, just push it to the side, be like, wow, this doesn't work. This is a fail. There's always something that fueled you or you learned from or inspired you and other parts didn't work. I wonder, Jenny, if you could share a little bit with us just from your own experience and your work on Pivot and talking to all kinds of people. What do you think, like people who are really great at navigating maybe something not working out and moving forward or making these pivots, like what are some of their superpowers that we can all learn from?
Well, I love everything you shared. And yeah, I'm with you just to go back to the podcast.
Yeah,
I agree. There's so much that I'm proud of, created a whole body of work. So much about it is priceless. I think there is just a sense, I don't know how to put it, but I think it's like getting really clear, exactly as you're saying, on the goals of a pivot in progress. And that I don't know. I think there's just a lot of noise when it comes to the financial elements of things. There's a lot of noise and a lot of shine. And that is the thing that I appreciate what you said, because I feel like people don't talk about as much. And so it's an interesting thing when we're trying to mix projects we're really excited about with the need to pay the bills. And I don't have the answers to that, but I think there's a lot of people exploring those questions, and there's so much constantly changing. The ones that tend to do well, I would say they are open and they're willing to do small experiments. So again, there's a Buddhist saying that I love, nothing is perfect, personal, or permanent. And if we put that to the idea of piloting, running small experiments, in Pivot, I talk about 3 E's for a small experiment. Ideally, it will help you determine 3 criteria. Do you enjoy it? Can you become an expert at it? And is there room to expand? Becoming an expert doesn't mean you have to be a public thought leader. It just means if you take a ceramics class, do you want to get better at it? Do you want to teach it someday? It's like looking for the room to expand. And so the people who tend to succeed are willing to run a couple small experiments in parallel. Again, because we don't know the answers up front, it's breaking things down into a small enough increment that you're willing to try.
I really love that. You know, the thing about that also makes me think of, I love this idea. So I spent 20 years in tech where we had this agile development process, and it's worth mentioning here. You're probably familiar with it, but for everyone listening who's like, what did she just say? Agile, the agile development process. And if you know about it, let me know, folks who are here. I'd just love to know if this is totally like Swahili or not. But the agile development process, the basic idea is that you run as a team when you're developing software, you run in these 2-week sprints. So instead of saying, we're going to build this big giant product for the next year and making all kinds of plans, that's what companies used to do. The agile development process says, we're going to focus for the next 2 weeks on building, like, these are the features we're going to build. And then you run the sprint and every day you have a stand up and you're like, what did I do? What am I going to get done? Where am I blocked? And then at the end of the sprint, you review, you see where what you did, what you learned, how to move forward. And I really, really love that. I've actually been meaning to like write something about that, how we should use that in our work. So I love, Jenny, you talking about running experiments. I think it also like takes the pressure off. Like, I'm not sure what I want to do with my career, or with my life, run an experiment, like follow that heart magnet and run an experiment. Okay. I love that there's some folks here who know what agile is. When I first learned about it, by the way, I was an investor in a tech company that was going through it. And I was like, what is agile workflow? Like, I, you know, had no idea, but I think it's one of the most useful methodologies. And I'm going to actually, this is a good impetus. I'm going to write more about that, bringing that into our lives. I think the other thing, and I wonder if you have thoughts on this, Jenny, I imagine you do. I think often, like in my mentorship work, people will say, you know, I feel really stuck in my career. I've achieved certain success, but I'm not sure what's next. I find that in midlife a lot, 40, 50, 60, depending. I think we forget we have other dimensions to ourselves that may not have to do with work, and that success is not like, I think traditional success is actually important. I don't want to dismiss it. It gives you a place in life. It allows you to take care of your family, et cetera. But then I think we have this new paradigm of success that we get to evolve into if we're lucky. And that to me is all about like the depth of your experience of aliveness. And it doesn't have to do with work. And so I just wonder if you could talk about that. I think often we forget that we have all these other dimensions to us. Like you mentioned ceramics, like maybe your job's fine. And what is actually making you feel stuck is that you have a creative impulse, which we all do, and you haven't been giving expression to that. Or it's singing, or it's gardening, or it's connecting with more people. Whereas we live in a world where everything comes down to work, you know, it's very work centric. So can you talk a little bit about that, maybe as it relates to your experience now or what you've learned of just like exploring those different dimensions of ourselves and not necessarily focusing everything into this has to be my job?
Yeah, I think if you're high net growth, as I would say in Pivot, or high net freedom, as I write in Free Time, I think that if your work is out of alignment, it's hard to focus on other things. So I understand the need to say, like, I got to get this figured out because you're spending so much time at work. But I love how you phrased it as the depth of aliveness. Sometimes work isn't changeable overnight, or you're in a job and it is paying the bills, and maybe it's not forever, but for now, it's providing a sense of security. I left Google 13 years ago now, this month pretty much. And so I get all kinds of Googlers calling me like, I'm thinking of quitting, what should I do? And then first thing I say to them is never like, yeah, quit tomorrow. In fact, the last few years I've been saying, don't quit now. It's not really a great market to quit into. Like, collect your next bonus, get one more bonus, like stay a little bit longer if you can, if you're not absolutely dying inside. I don't think you need to like rock the boat. So then what do you do in the interim, and how can you be grateful for what it is providing while doing exactly what you're saying, Natalie, while expanding beyond that? And also part of that expansion and aliveness is drawing better boundaries. So sometimes it's like the aliveness actually comes from saying no more and not going to the baby shower or lunch invitation from someone who wants to pick your brain, or like not checking your work emails after a certain time at night, and just dropping the ball a little bit, like not in a big way. You wouldn't want anyone to notice. I don't even think anyone would notice, but it's releasing some of that grip that we have internally of how things need to be, or we need to do all the things, juggle all the things, be perfect at all the things. And the other thing about pivoting as we get older, and I feel like there are people who are in my community who are in their 80s who have wisdom to impart that I don't have a clue about yet. But I have noticed that my pivots as I've grown older, I'm 40 now, there does start to be sometimes grieving for the path we didn't take, or like, I thought I would be a financially secure millionaire by now, like completely able to retire off of the money I would have saved because my business would have been so successful.
Right.
And because the choices I made to prioritize depth, relationships, spaciousness, health, I would never say those preclude earning a lot of money. But the fact is, I am not the millionaire of my 20-something dreams at this point, or like multimillionaire retirement money. That's okay. But there's sort of grieving the paths not taken, or Luke Burgess in his book, Wanting, he talks about mimetic desire or mimetic rivalry. Even sometimes I'll have a friend where we started our businesses at the same time, and now they are at that really financially abundant, comfortable place. And it's like, okay, I have to just remind myself I'm on my own path. I'm on my own journey. But sometimes it can feel, I think, as we make choices in our lives, Cheryl Strayed calls them the ghost ships. We have like a ghost self that also sets sail. So whether you choose to have kids or not to have kids, at some point, that's your choice. And it's cool, but it means you've had to forego another choice. Like, there are certain choices we make in life that are mutually exclusive.
Yes.
You do it or you don't, and you can't quite undo it. I'm not saying kids is not a great example you could adopt later in life or become a foster parent, but I think you all get what I'm saying, which is that, like for me, getting married, kind of sometimes still grieve my single solo self who could just like cavort, travel around the world and work from anywhere and be like totally locked in and lived alone and like just total freedom and autonomy. but I wouldn't give up what I have now. I love what I have. And I also grieve some of the perks that I had then.
Yeah. I think that's so beautiful, Jenny. I love that we get to wrap on this because I think it is such a, I don't know, I haven't thought about it before in this context. And that's my favorite thing about doing this podcast is when my guest shares something I've never thought about. But this idea that we're making choices all the time, right? That lead us down a certain path. And I love to think about, and I've talked about this before, like thinking of our life as more of a painting rather than a path. And I am an artist, but I think of, and I just give this, to offer this to you and everyone listening. If you think about this idea that your life is a painting and every choice you make, every decision, you're putting a stroke on a painting. And like when I paint, the hardest thing is actually the first stroke. Once I have the first stroke of paint on there, I'm like, oh, okay, this direction. But sometimes I start painting and then after a while, I'm like, wow, I really don't like this. And I want to go in a different direction. Going in a different direction, I have to give up the ghost of the original painting idea, right? And so I think this is such an important thing that you bring up, that every choice we make as we like are in the eternal goo in a way of life, you know? Every choice we make is also an anti-choice. We're choosing not something else, right? And I think I love your encouragement to just acknowledge that. And not acknowledge it from a place of like being stuck in it or I woulda, coulda, shoulda, but just to acknowledge that this is the path, like this is the stroke I didn't write, or this is the, so I really love that. And I think is just to wrap kind of a thought that's coming up for me as we talk about this, I think I catch myself doing this too. I don't know if you do, where sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm like, I even heard you heard me say it, oh, I'm coming out of my goo. I have more clarity. It's almost like we keep waiting for this part in our life where everything will be clear. There'll be no uncertainty, but that never comes. That's not the human condition. That's the AI condition. That is not the human condition. There's always uncertainty. There's always like, could have done this. I might do this. And I think for me, what I'm taking away from our conversation is that it's not all, you know, unicorns and amazing. It's not about pretending this is all like, yeah, uncertainty, but it is about like looking for the possibility, the serendipity, following the heart magnet, staying open, and also acknowledging that as we make choices, we are making some unchoices. And I think that's, I don't know, I find that a really, again, as an artist, to me, I see this as like this, our life is like an ever expanding canvas. So there's always uncertainty, but we also do have agency and choices. So we can choose to work on that project like you did at Google. We can choose to stop doing something that isn't serving us. So I wonder, just on that, as we wrap, if I'd love to ask you, like, what are some of your experiments that you are running or thinking about or excited about in this openness?
Well, love the idea of an ever expanding canvas. And that aligns with something I say in Pivot: decisions are data. You can't go wrong, really. Sometimes when you're really feeling indecisive, my friend gave me advice when I was writing, when in doubt, go without. So sometimes indecision is the decision. It's actually telling you, you don't want to do that thing. You just maybe don't know how to turn it down. But also decisions are data. The canvas expands. So yes, you might have put a mark down, but it's recoverable. You can build on it. My dad and my husband are painters as well. So I'm well familiar with
that.
My
That's
dad
so
calls
cool.
Some of his paintings angry teenagers. That he's like, I've got a room full of angry teenagers.
I love
and
that.
I've got to fix them. So yeah, my experiments are having this quiet, enjoying it, not rushing to fill the space with what Tosha Silver calls divine decoys, like
yes,
tempting
I love
opportunities.
Tosha Silver's work. Oh, I love that connection too. If just for everyone listening, actually, I have one of her books right here within reach, which is like weird because most of my books are on the bookshelf that I can't reach. Tosha Silver is an author. Everyone, if you don't know her work, this is one of her books. It's called "It's Not Your Money," which is really not about money. But if you have heaviness around money or worry about money, I highly recommend it. And Jenny just posted her outrageous openness. So we are double recommending Tosha Silver's work. I love that you brought that up. Outrageous openness. Can you wrap us up? Can you tell us what that is? Because you're living
Her
it.
work changed my life. And it was that when you're fed up and you're exhausted and you don't know what's next, as you said, there's a phrase, not Tosha's, but lift the oars. This is Zen saying, it's okay to lift the oars. And outrageous openness is about surrendering to divine order, that there is something higher than you, even if it's collective consciousness. There is a flow that if you release the need to know, you will be shown. And you can ask, you can ask. I had three contracts that were due to be signed 2 weeks ago. And on a Thursday, I said, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know how to decide on this one divine decoy. And I said, please show me a sign and make it unequivocal. And the next morning, when I was supposed to decide with my coffee at 4:40 a.m., I said, I'm going to decide on Friday morning with my coffee. A four-alarm fire happened halfway down the block, seven buildings over. I immediately ran out as soon as I saw the smoke. 150 firefighters responded. There was no way I could decide that day. So I punted the decision. And now I got additional clarity 1 week out that clarified where I did not say yes and was about to that morning. So it's like, I got the sign and it was unequivocal. I couldn't go to work that day. There was so much chaos happening on the block and we were helping neighbors and stuff. Yeah. So if you just have a little surrender and a little faith, you will be shown. Even if it's your own intuition picking up these clues.
Yes. I love that, Jenny. And I it's a beautiful way to wrap, you know, this idea. I just want to say this idea of surrender to the overachieving doer in me, which is the way I spend, as I mentioned, most of my life. I think probably a lot of people, maybe even you, nodding your head like that, whatever had to happen, I had to make it happen and everything was within my control. You know, when I went through my burnout and breakdown, that was a humbling thing to realize that actually, like I could no longer, I could not push through. Like I had to lift the oars. I was forced into surrender. And I think that one of the most beautiful lessons that I've learned, and you're living it, is that surrender does not mean you give up living. Surrender means you release a little bit of the ego's control, that you can figure everything out from this one vantage point of your humanity, and that there's openness to other things, which is all about like increasing the surface area of possibility. And I just want to leave everyone with that, because I think that we began by talking about like some of the challenges about uncertainty and the human, of course, the brain wants to keep you safe. So it's often like it wants to do things to control the situation. Of course, like that's natural, but it really, and I'm someone who follows my doing. I think taking steps is really important. I think most things in life, you can't intellectualize them. So taking steps is important, but at the same time, I think the point you bring up, Jenny, is also so powerful. We also need a little bit of surrender and understanding that if we can let go a little bit, if we can over effort a little bit less, and if we can create a little bit more surface area for serendipity or an idea to come to us that we're not over forcing, that is actually like a beautiful part of uncertainty. So thank you for that. You've given me so many new things to marinate on. I love that. That's the big gift of this. I am so grateful for you. Thank you for being so open and so honest and for all your insights. Everyone, all the links about Jenny's work and her books will be in your follow-up email and the show notes as always. Jenny, I'm so grateful. Thank you for honoring us in this community with your being and your authenticity. And I mean that in a very like raw, honest way. That's the biggest gift. I'm really grateful I got to know you. Thank you for doing the podcast that you did so that I could be on it, so that we could meet.
I know. I'm like, thank you, past self, who had that project. But really, thank you for having me, Natalie, and everyone who's here live with all the heart emojis coming through.
Yes, and no, you've given us.
Or listening in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, a big gift. And yes, I always want to say hello to everyone or goodbye to everyone, all the thousands of you who are listening in the future. And to the awesome humans who are here or listening to us, I always say this, thank you for being. Thank you for being open to hearing something new. And I always like to give homework. And so everyone's homework today is to release a little bit of control and allow for a little bit of more surface of possibility and serendipity in wherever you are in your life. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Jenny, so much. Thank you, awesome humans. Have a beautiful, beautiful rest of your day, everyone. Take care.
All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. And I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com. And please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.